Welcome to Clause and Effect, a Tiger newspaper podcast. This is a revamp of the old Tiger podcast, Nightmare on Mission Street. And on this podcast, I, along with another Tiger staff member, will be revisiting articles previously written in Tiger. But before we get started, we want to insert a quick disclaimer that this podcast does not represent the views of Tiger newspaper, SPSD, SPHS, or its employees. So I'm Clementine, I'm your host, I'm a sophomore, and I'm the copy editor on Tiger.
My name is Hannah. I'm a guest. I'm a senior and the editor-in-chief.
So we are recording this episode in the office in the Tiger Room, so it'll be nice and quiet. So how are you doing today, Hannah?
I'm doing good. I'm really cold, actually.
Yeah, the rain's been real.
Yeah.
Yeah, how are your classes?
I'm so over it. I thought people were lying about senioritis, but it's actually so real. So, I didn't think it would be this bad. It's getting really bad. Don't tell anyone I said that, though.
Yeah. Okay, so today, Hannah and I will be talking about an article that Hannah wrote in the April 2022 issue of Tiger called Serial Killers, A Modern Fascination with the Morbid. So, let's get it on. Okay, so, Hannah, why did you decide to write this article? Like, what kind of inspired you to write it?
Well, it wasn't originally my pitch. This was one of the opinion articles that I'm still kind of most proud of. It came up in brainstorms. I actually had no idea what I was writing about for a good majority of the cycle. But I remember I, like, sat down with then-copy editor Chloe Marr and then-opinion editor Sam Grotenstein. We, like, sat down for, like, 20-30 minutes just, like, talking about this, trying to, like, figure out what the heck I wanted to say in this article. It took a lot longer than I thought it would. It was a really hard article to write, if I'm being honest. I was a sophomore, if that says anything. Yeah, I was a sophomore. It was a tough article. I didn't really know. Like, I'm not super into true crime, so it was a bit of research. It was actually a lot of research that went into it, but, like, the more that I wrote it, and after I talked with, the two editors, like, we talked about how, like, there are, like, implications with true crime media, and how, there's, like, this one line that I there's this one line where I said, directors deliberately cast attractive actors in the roles of these serial killers, and, like, that came up a lot, while I was talking with them, and I do, and, honestly, like, the two editors, while we were talking about it, they didn't really talk about this, but this was a point that I kind of came up with, and I kind of just rolled with, but I don't think that's necessarily true anymore. Like, people who are bigger in the industry, it's, like, kind of their job to be, like, conventionally attractive and act, and so there's not a lot of, like, big names. Like, people who are, like, bigger names in the industry, like, they have both of that, which is why they end up getting cast. Like, it's kind of unavoidable that, like, someone that you want on screen is gonna be conventionally attractive and, like, look pleasing to the eye. Like, even if they're depicting, honestly, one of the grossest people ever known, it's the fact that they are on screen and that, like, they go through this casting process, and most of them are bigger names because there's, like, that draw to that media, so yeah, that's, like, something I don't really agree with anymore, but yeah
so I also really liked reading this article. It was super interesting, and it wasn't really something that I had really thought about, and the title was really cool, and I really liked this one line. It was the romanticization of serial killers inspires a unique morbid curiosity that is a direct reflection of human nature's fascination with evil, and our attraction to the underbelly of society reflects a darkness within ourselves. That was, like, amazing writing, and it was such an interesting take that just so obviously and explicitly outlined the thesis.
Yeah, I think I do think that line kind of encompasses what I do talk about in the article, which a lot of the points I talked about I do still agree with. So, like, the portrayal of these criminals kind of leads to unjust consequences, which, like, almost, like, tortures the families of victims, because oftentimes they're made without permission. So it's just like, based on true events. And so it even, a lot of the time, like, a lot of true crime media doesn't even depict, like, what really happens despite the name.
Yeah, like Dateline or something.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, it's especially like Netflix shows.
Yes.
They're all like based on true events, and then they focus specifically on the criminal.
Yeah.
And so then it kind of minimizes the experiences of the victims and the people around them, because you don't focus in on that as much. Because a lot of that money comes from focusing on, like, those big actors who are playing these criminals. And so it, like, really just, like, tortures the families of victims watching, and, like, especially, like, seeing, like, young people, like, on TikTok, like, thirsting over, like, edits of these people, like, especially, like, Zac Efron. Like, Zac Efron played Ted Bundy in a Netflix series, which, Ted Bundy himself was, like, kind of known for being, like, very charismatic and, like, good-looking, which was also why he was so, like, crazed over initially.
I think that he was, just, like, objectively just, like, he was hot, and people thought
he was
hot. He was
conventionally attractive. People thought he was hot. They thought it was hot that he would... I guess they thought it was also hot that he'd, like, kidnapped women and, like, sexually assaulted them and murdered them. And people would kind of just excuse it because he was hot. And that kind of just, like, carries over in the depictions of him now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even still, like, people... It's been, like, what? His murders happened in, like, the 70s?
I think so, yeah.
Throughout the 70s. So, it's been, like, 50 years, and people still have a lot of the same sentiments surrounding him. And especially after, like, the depiction of him with, like, Zac Efron, who is very well-known.
If you have a objectively attractive actor playing an objectively hot serial killer, then I feel like that's a problem.
It's bound to happen, which... honestly, like, in itself is kind of horrible.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't think it's, like, something you can blame someone for.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, if the original person was objectively hot and people felt about him like that in the first place.
Yeah.
If you have an objectively hot actor playing an objectively hot criminal, people are going to still think like that. And that's not something that you can control necessarily.
Yeah, I think that, like, you can't really, like, put out an ad for, like, ugly actor wanted for a hot serial killer part.
Yeah, and as disgusting as the story is, it's, like, just a portrayal of it, it's, like, people are going to excuse it because he's hot.
Yeah.
Like, that's just how media works.
That's just how life works, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, a lot of these works, like, kind of serve as a way to, like, sympathize with serial killers, like, showing, like, their upbringing, like, how they grew up, like, their family life, being, like, oh, like, he was, like, heavily abused. And so, it's, like, showing all of that kind of, creates a sense of sympathy, which, I don't know, me personally, I don't think a lot of these people deserve sympathy for the things that they did to other people.
Yeah, I think if you're showing somebody being abused or neglected or just their upbringing, then it's, like, you're gonna feel sympathy for them and you're gonna feel bad for them, but then... you're gonna feel bad for them for murdering a bunch of people, which is, like, that's kind of what the producers are doing with these shows, intentionally or unintentionally.
Yeah.
Because I think that's just what's happening.
Yeah.
That's how viewers are thinking.
I think, like, honestly, like, I don't think it's intentional that, like, producers and directors, like, they portray people or, like, portray these criminals in that way, just because the nature of the subject is like that. And so... but, like, we continue to consume this kind of media because it's, like, quirky and fun. Like, oh my gosh, like, I'm into true crime. I'm so quirky and, like, goth, emo. Like, I'm so morbid. I'm so different. Like, we have this obsession with, like, being different from everyone. And, like, true crime is definitely a part of that. Where people are like, oh, yeah, like, oh, I watch, like, this, like, true crime show on Netflix every weekend.
You're like, oh, I drive to work every day and I listen to the Crime Junkie podcast and, like, the true crime podcast, and it's like, okay, well, that's
it's
okay.
Like, okay,
like,
you're just, yeah. Okay, like, there was this one line in the article, wait, I don't even know how to pronounce it, Schadenfreude did?
Yeah.
Yeah, that line. I knew how to pronounce it at some point, like, when I wrote the article, but, basically, what this word means, it's not English, or it is, but it's, like, British. Basically, what it
British.
Means is, like, it's like, someone's obsession with the suffering of other people. So, like, I remember the copy editor, when we were talking about, she pulled this out, and I was like, oh my god, that's the coolest thing I've ever heard of. But I included it in the article, and I do kind of still agree, like, Hollywood has to make money, and so it's, like, just the nature of the industry and the nature of the subject matter, where they're like, oh, like, we need... Like, we really can't blame the creators for turning to, like, an attractive cast, because that's, like... Yeah, like, we already talked about this. Like, part of, like, what makes these criminals alluring was because, like, they look like everyone else. Mm-hmm. Some of them are, like, objectively attractive, and yet they do all of these insane things to other people. But it's, like, because of this, like, morbid fascination that people have, it's, like, that's what continues to bring people to true crime. And it's, like, it's the nature that, like, we are, in a way, like, obsessed with the suffering of other people. Just, like, we talk about it a lot. Like, yes, it comes from a place of sympathy as well, but it's, like, we do ultimately turn to that. It's, like, that's, like, the first example people bring up, almost. So, it's, like, it's, you really can't say, like, oh, this is this person's fault that people are acting this way, because it's really not. It's just the way that people act, it's the way that people think, and it's honestly kind of just, like, how people's minds are wired in a way.
I think that if you're, like, saying that people are obsessed with other people's suffering, I think that it's not specifically with other people's suffering. It's kind of just the story of how that suffering started, and it's with the person inflicting the suffering, kind of, and inflicting the pain, and it's not necessarily they're obsessed with, like, seeing how these victims were, like, tortured.
It's not that. It's, like, the circumstances and the consequences of all of that. I think this, the idea of, like, the, like, suffering of other people, I think it also comes from just, like, a point of, like, fascination of, like, or, like, obsession with justice, is that, like, a lot of, a big thing of, like, why, or what I think is kind of a big factor of, like, a lot of this true crime media is, like, people continue to consume it because they want to see these people get, be, like, have consequences in their face. So, like, they want, like, that ending where, oh, they do go to jail, or they are, you know, like, punished for their crimes, for bringing upon that, for, like, inflicting that kind of pain and suffering on other people. And I think that's where it comes more for, like, this obsession with true crime and, like, the suffering of other people. It's everything that surrounds it. Like, unless you're a psychopath, you're not watching or consuming true crime because you want to hear about how people were tortured.
Yeah, I think that these shows and, like, these documentaries would not have as many viewers or as many, like, audience goers if the ending weren't the criminal getting what they deserved and, like, being punished. I think that it would just be kind of like a loose knot that was never really tied, and then the documentary would kind of just be kind of a flop, you know?
Yeah, like it's like our whole obsession with, like, tying ends.
Yeah.
And, like, having that, like, satisfying ending. I think that's also really true for, like, crime.
I think that's true for, honestly, like, any kind of media.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, people are so pissed when there's a cliffhanger.
Yeah. Especially in, like, a series of books. If there's just, like, you're on book two, and then there's, like, oh, and then she drove to the edge of the cliff, and then it's, like, it's done, and then you have to read the second book, and it's, like, okay. Or the third book, whatever. Yeah. So, are you, like, a crime junkie, and do you watch, like, the Netflix serial killer documentaries, or...
Not really. Like, I've seen... Okay, like, I'll say, like, in terms of, like, documentaries, like, I've seen a couple, but it's not something that I do, like, regularly.
Yeah.
I don't know, there's, like, something... I'm also, like, super interested in cults.
Literally.
Like, I've watched a couple documentaries on, like, cults, and, like, especially in Korea. Like, I watched, there's a Netflix series, that kind of covers, like, religious cults in South Korea, and, like, it was so interesting, and I watched it with my parents, and, like, but I would say, like, serial killer stuff, not really, because it's a little unsettling for me. But I've listened to, like, my fair share of, like, Rotten Mango. I, honestly, like, whenever I'm, like, doom scrolling, or, like, I'm on YouTube just, like, falling down a rabbit hole, I end up watching her videos for so long. Just because she covers a lot of, like, Asian, like, Asian crime. And most of the stuff that she covers isn't necessarily... It's a lot... It spans further than just, like, murder. Like, a lot of the, like, it's a lot of, like, cyber crimes or, like, cults, like, stuff like that, which I do find interesting, and I think, like, as I, like, progress and I'm like, oh my god, this is so cheesy, but it's, like, as I'm, like, an adult and I'm going into the world, just, like, kind of, like, keeping myself educated.
Yeah.
And, like, learning about these things, because, like, these things do happen, and I think it's useful to know, you know, obviously they're kind of entertaining, like, the way that she presents everything. I think it also really just depends on, like, the presenter and how it's presented.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
No, I listened to this one podcast called American Panic, and it was about, like, this, like, cult, not cult, and it was really interesting to listen to, and it's kind of just, like, the mindset of people who are in a cult and people who kind of fall into a cult and, or not fall into a cult. It was really interesting. Yeah.
Oh, low-key, my favorite YouTuber right now, his name is Tyler Oliveira.
Okay.
He kind of does, like, investigative journalism. He used to be just, like, a prank channel.
Uh-huh.
And then he kind of got into, like, interviews, and then he started going to, like, this crazy investigative journalism. And he kind of, like, he goes in, like, I remember, like, one of his videos was in Portland, Oregon, because Portland, Oregon, they decriminalized almost all drugs, and so it was, like, the implications of that. So I'd say not as much true crime for me, but it's, like, it's stuff like that, like, policy that, like, relates to crime, and, like, I feel like that's closer, yeah.
Yeah.
But this is specifically a plug for Tyler Oliver. His content's super fun. Get into investigative journalism.
Okay. So, what are some things that you wish you kind of emphasized more in the article, or wish you kind of wrote about more?
We kind of touched on this a little bit, but I would say I don't think it's the media that's necessarily turning people to this, like, morbid curiosity, but rather it's, like, the familiarity we've developed to this kind of media, and, like, especially, like, these crimes and the implications of these crimes. It's, like, the more that we consume, the more we're desensitized to it. And so I'm also not at, like, I'm also, like, kind of at fault. Like, I'm kind of the same, and I think that's just because, like, I am human. But it's, we're continuously drawn to this kind of stuff because, like, we've gotten used to it almost. Mm-hmm. Like, if you turn on the news, like, I think especially, like, after the early 2000s, like, the turn of the millennium, like, I would say just, like, our engagement with, like, even, like, as horrible as it is to say, like, school shootings.
Yeah.
Like, we've become so desensitized to it. Like, think 25 years ago, nobody was doing hard lockdown drills in classes.
Yeah, now they're, like, the fun thing where you can, like, hide under the table and turn on the lights and just sit there for 30 minutes and, like, whisper, talk to your friends, and have your teacher shush you, and it's fun because it's so, so normal.
And I think that's honestly really unfortunate, but that's also why, like, people have these kinds of reactions to, like, true crime media, is that, like, it's become a new normal.
Yeah.
So there's no longer this, like, shock factor, which is honestly really unfortunate, because all of these things that are happening should continue to be I can't even articulate it, but it's just, like, we're so used to it that it's just, like, it doesn't hit anymore.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, it happened again? Oh, there's just another name. Oh, that's just another phase.
Like, oh, a woman got stabbed at the mall. Oh, not again.
Not
like,
again.
Like, it's kind of just like, oh, that happened 2 days ago, too. Whatever. Yeah. Yeah, and it is very interesting how people are so enamored with crime in general. Like, with media coverage, I mean, obviously news outlets have to cover crime, but the way that producers and other types of media portray just heartbreaking stories of people and victims is honestly just gross. And I think that a lot of people will intentionally or unintentionally exploit people's misfortune just for good ratings.
Yeah. But I do think, though, like, the nature of the topic in itself is unsettling, and people are kind of, like, engrossed in it because it's something that challenges human morals. And, like, this idea of purity that we put on a pedestal, and that so many people hold as a standard. Because, like, as we continue to, like, be desensitized to it, it's still horrible. And we know that, and it challenges our morals, and yet we continue to, like, be pulled to it because it goes against what we think is right.
So it's difficult to, like, not be unsettling, like, covering it in the first place. Like, when you're covering it in a cinematic way. Because, like, mm-hmm. like, what you mentioned is that, like, the way that the news covers crime and the way that a Netflix documentary covers crime is going to be very different. So it may not be intentional, but it just the nature of what we're talking about and how you have to cover it and how you're choosing to cover it is what creates that, like, those differences and, like, what makes people uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's also often not done in very respectful ways, especially with, like, recreations and stuff. I don't think, because, again, like, a lot of the time it's made without the permission of people involved, and so it just turns into this, like, whole mess of, like, disrespect, and, like, kind of, like, bringing back things that don't need to be brought back, yeah, in a way.
I mean, yeah. I know this isn't, like, true crime, but I remember this one scene from Riverdale.
From, yes!
From, oh my god, like, years ago, and it was, Betty, and she, like, I think it was, like, a dream or a flashback, and she, like, she was holding, like, a dead cat or something, or, like, she had killed a cat, and it was just, like, this whole thing, and that, like, legit haunted me for, like, nights, and I was, like, terrified to go to sleep, and I was, like, kind of thinking, I was, like, this literally, like, happens, like, this is literally how serial killers are born, and this is, like, they start with, like, insects, and then, like, they work their way up to, like, dogs and cats, and then it's, like, oh my god, like, this actually happens in real life, and, like, that just freaked me out as, like, a freaking, like, 12 or 13 year old, and I was so scared for, like, nights, and, like, I think it's really interesting how people can kind of just shift from covering a story that actually happened to a family, and how they lost a loved one, and then it can shift to, like, fictional portrayals of serial killers and, like, how a killer is born. Yeah. So I'm also wondering, are there parts of the article that you kind of still agree with, or you think that still stand?
Well, I'd say that, like, true crime is this, like, I guess that, like, true crime is, like, this niche thing that allows people to, like, indulge in their morbid nature.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't pronounce this word again, but whatever.
Schadenfreude.
Schadenfreude tendencies.
Yeah.
But yeah, just, like, it is kind of, like, I don't know. I'm kind of a believer that, like, human nature, because, you know, there's that, like, argument, like, our humans are, like, inherently bad, or humans are inherently good.
Oh my god,
good.
History class. John
yeah.
Locke or whatever.
Yeah. Like, I'm kind of a firm believer that it's really a mix of both. You can't say that humans are inherently good or inherently bad. Like, we're people, mm-hmm. and what makes us people and what differentiates us from other animals, almost, is that there are elements of both. And, like, although, like, it can reflect pretty poorly, it's often not the sole purpose of true crime to, like, feed into people's, like, mm-hmm. fascination with the morbid. At the end of the day, it's kind of just another form of media and, like, people's livelihoods. And so it's just, like, something that we consume. It's something that we indulge in. But it's not necessarily, like, only to feed into these crazy fascinations unless every single person alive is a psychopath. But I do think there's, like, a pretty deep importance of sharing other people's stories, keeping these conversations alive no matter how hard it is to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's the journalist in me. Maybe that's the communications, journalism, political science major in me. But, like, sharing these stories and, like, keeping people in the loop, I do think is, like, the biggest thing.
Yeah, definitely. So, Hannah, is there anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, honestly, like, true crime is kind of crucial, because really it's this idea of sharing stories, staying educated, keeping yourself safe, keeping the people around you safe, noticing early signs, and not repeating history, because I think the last thing we want is another Ted Bundy.
Yeah.
But I do think one of the things that I kind of wish I outlined a bit more in the original article was that, you know, this shouldn't be done without the permission, this shouldn't be done without the permission from people involved.
Definitely.
Because it was a point in the original article, but I wish I emphasized it more.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think it's something that I kind of agree with the most now, is it's really not fair to create and spread this kind of media And especially thirst over Zac Efron in the process. while families kind of sit and wonder, like, why they have to relive every moment again when they don't want to. Yeah. And it's not something that they want to go through again. And it's done without their insight. So it's, like, inaccurate portrayals, focusing on things that honestly shouldn't be focused on. But yeah. At the end of the day, it's people's stories that I think do need to be shared.
Definitely. Yeah. Well,
thank you for listening to this episode of Clause and Effect. I'm your host, Clementine Evans.
And I'm Hannah Bay.
If you guys have any questions or comments about this episode, please feel free to contact us at contacttigernewspaper@gmail.com or leave a comment. Thank you, and see you next episode.